Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri podcast by me, veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
Most of us don't give much thought to the burden of domestication. We know our dogs and cats are members of domestic species. But beyond that, we hardly give the effects of domestication a second thought, let alone consider it a burden for us or our pets. This general acceptance leads us to make all kinds of assumptions about domestication. Among them, we assume it's a process that humans impose on animals. We're the masters of the universe. Unless we deny it for religious or philosophical reasons, the probability that we too belong to a domestic species often comes as a shock, or at least makes us uncomfortable. When we look in the mirror, we see a superior being with a bigger brain that dwarfs that of all other domestic animals. It's our responsibility to look after them. We don't see our more infantile human features, comparably bigger eyes, bigger ears, the flattened facial features of a relatively hairless young primate. That neoteny, that state of persistent behavioral and physiological immaturity, is what distinguishes domestic animals from their wild ancestors. Although our domestic roots can help explain a lot of otherwise incomprehensible human behaviors, it also can contribute to bond and behavioral problems with our pets, and especially our dogs. Few people would argue that some of our highly bred purebred dogs may be more dependent on humans than their free-roaming ancestors. However, we may prefer not to see the similarities between their and our own dependencies, let alone the conflicts that these may create for us. For example, people increasingly may position companion animals as human caregivers. Sometimes this role is imposed by others, such as healthcare providers or family members who perceive an animal's presence as beneficial to their patients or loved ones. However, many others seek out the benefits of such caring animal companionship on their own in responses to changes in society. In the United States and other parts of the world, the population of people living alone continues to grow. Longer lifespans in some cultures may increase this likelihood. Whether by choice or happenstance, some of those singletons will seek animal companionship. Other times, companion animals function as social buffers within sometimes increasingly complex human households. Studies of benefits of animal companionship in an increasing array of environments also continue to grow, as do media and word-of-mouth reports of this phenomenon. All of this normalizes the idea that animals exist to benefit us. The amount and kind of human needs we expect companion animals to meet poses no problems, provided those animals can handle the greater responsibilities that result from this. If the person has special needs and the animal has been bred, selected, and properly trained to assume those caregiving duties for a certain number of hours every day, no problems will arise. But if not, suddenly the burden of domestication may become very heavy indeed for human and animal alike. The trouble is that we humans often want it both ways. We want to deny our own domestic status and place ourselves above our domestic pets. But rather than thinking, because I'm higher than Griselda, it's my responsibility to take care of and protect her, We may interpret our exalted position to mean that it's our pet's job to give us what we want when we want it. Our personal support dog's job description may include getting us away from what we consider physically or emotionally traumatic situations as fast as possible. At the same time, though, we want them to stick by us and meet our emotional needs, also on demand. Oh, and we want them to physically protect us and all our stuff, too. We don't perceive these expectations as making unreasonable demands on our animals, let alone mutually exclusive ones. We see it as normal. It's their job. That's what they're supposed to do, if they love us, especially our dogs. We may place the same demands on our cats, but the probability of their agreeing to our demands is much lower. Regardless of the specific combination of factors or the trigger, when our demands exceed our animal's ability to fulfill them, our relationships with them may deteriorate rapidly. Because we place so much value on what they can do for us, when they can't deliver, we want the problem fixed. And naturally, as soon as possible. Complicating matters even more. For many dog-dependent people, that means the animal immediately must change to relieve the person's discomfort. So great is their dependency on the animals doing this, some of these folks can see how unrealistic their demands may be. Let's consider a situation that involves a 10-pound fluffy mix we'll call Sweetums, and his owner, who perceives him as her physical and emotional protector 24/7. If there's any doubt, she'll tell you how she'd die without him. Many times. However, her relationship with Sweetums is highly anthropomorphic. She refers to him as her baby, talks to him in baby talk, dresses him in little outfits, and surrounds him with other pet paraphernalia that broadcasts that same message. Sweetums is also what some human canine observers call an armpit dog. He spends more time tucked under his owner's arm or in her lap than he does walking on the floor or ground. In these and other ways, she unwittingly communicates her dependent status to her dog. Unfortunately, in doing so, she promotes her fluffy little baby way beyond his capacity. By communicating her neediness, she throws the dog into a protective position by default. At the same time, her need to hold him close to her makes it impossible for him to do that. Logic says that asking a naturally more subordinate little dog to protect a 140-pound human is ludicrous, let alone expect the dog to do that from his armpit position when she opens the door to the two burly guys who came to deliver her new refrigerator. When her anxious chatter and death grip on her dog increases his stress, these, to him, insubordinate owner responses make his already overwhelming task of protecting both of them even more difficult. But he has no desire to take on these burly guys just yet. He needs to deal with a problem much closer to home. He squirms away from her grasp and attempts to grab her by the muzzle. He treats her just as he would an insubordinate dog who interferes with his attempts to protect them both. But because of the considerable size difference, she winds up with an arc of bite marks and subsequent stitches and plastic surgery on her upper lip. This human-canine relationship teeters on the edge of a tipping point. Will his owner's oft-professed love of Sweetums cause her to learn more about why her dog did what he did and what she can do to help him? Or will she have him euthanized or give him away because he didn't fulfill her needs the way she wanted, regardless of the burden doing so placed on her dog? The answers boil down to who she thinks should be responsible for the welfare of whom in their relationship. Who should be the grown-up, her or her dog? That's the question each of us must answer for ourselves.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.